I'm Brady Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, Washington State just lost a wonderful journalist and an even better man. Plus, Dave Reichert and Mark Mullett will join us to make their final pitch in the race for governor ahead of the August primary. And polling is looking very, very good for the four Let's Go Washington initiatives. That and more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at undividedpod.com. Hello and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. I want to start with some heavy news today. I'll get into some frustrations I have, disappointments I have in the conduct of people on my social media pages coming up. I'm not mad, I'm disappointed. So put a pin in that and I'll talk about it after I get to the headline here. So Washington State lost a tremendous journalist this week, Matt Driscoll, who has worked at the News Tribune for several years. He is the News Tribune columnist and an opinion editor. He passed away Sunday, only 43 years old. The news about this just came out yesterday, and man, it hit me like a ton of bricks. It was interesting, so I was having an off-the-record conversation with someone in politics, and they were telling me that someone with the News Tribune had passed away, and I guess I didn't even think that it was Matt Driscoll, because I had just been exchanging emails with him not a week ago. And again, he's just so young. And this is just devastating. I mean, I've known Matt Driscoll for a really long time. Matt used to work back when I was a crime and justice reporter and a reporter covering City Hall in Seattle. He worked for the Seattle Weekly at the time. This was many, many years ago when we were both much younger than we are now. And he was always so supportive of my work. He had written two articles for the Seattle Weekly about my reporting covering riots and protests, and was always very kind. And I think one of the things that struck me about Matt is, you know, he and I are pretty opposite when it comes to our political beliefs. And, you know, he was very liberal, and I don't consider myself very liberal, certainly, but he was always so respectful. One of the nicest guys you could ever meet, genuinely kind, genuinely cared about his profession, about putting good information out there for people in Washington State, genuinely cared about his community and the state. And yeah, he had his opinions, and not everyone always agreed with his opinions, but that's the way that this market is. And that's the way journalism is. You know, I was struck right after news came out that he had passed away. There were people on both sides of the political aisle putting out sentiments. Governor Jay Inslee sent out a tweet: Tacoma still has the Rainiers and the Narrows Bridge, but our city of destiny has a hole in our hearts at the loss of Matt Driscoll. What a big heart and an insightful pen he gave us. I miss him dearly. Representative J.T. Wilcox, a former House Minority Leader, a longtime Republican, said, I'm so very sorry to see this news. I talked with Matt often. We texted privately sometimes. He was honest and respected honest people who disagreed with him. What a loss for Tacoma and journalism, and most of all for his family. And that line, I think, is really reflective of my sentiments about Matt Driscoll when JT says he was honest and respected honest people who disagreed with him. And, you know, all of this, you know, aside, he was a husband and a father. And I think that's the most devastating thing at just 43 years old. I mean, my husband is 43 years old, and I gave him a big hug yesterday. And just, you know, life is so short and fleeting, and you never know when you're going to lose someone you love. And so, you know, his politics and his profession aside, you know, our heart goes out certainly to his wife and to his children. But, you know, this show is called Undivided. And as you guys know, we don't pull punches. I've said it before. Undivided doesn't mean that we're all kumbaya and we expect everyone to disagree or to agree and everything's going to be fine. No. Undivided is about rejecting sort of the fringes and these false narratives that are meant to divide us. And I think Matt Driscoll, although he was on the opposite side of the political aisle as I am, certainly, he was very good at that. He was very good at seeing the good in people and in listening to opposing viewpoints and in valuing them and in not acting like he is always right and his positions are always right and righteous and no one else can have a position as righteous as he is. I thought he was tremendous at that. And in fact, you know, Matt, after he left the Seattle Weekly, he and I had reconnected in the last, oh, 6 or so months because he was willing to platform me at the Tacoma News Tribune. You know, I have been very critical of the mainstream media ecosystem in Washington State. And for that reason, I've become a little persona non grata with some of the mainstream outlets. You know, I had been doing op-eds for the Seattle Times, you know, and then I was pretty critical of the Seattle Times and hadn't been doing any op-eds for them since I'd ratcheted up my criticality of them. But Matt Driscoll at the Tacoma News Tribune, you know, running their opinion section, had been very willing to publish a few op-eds in recent months that were really, really important to me. One of them, just a few days ago, had to do with the gubernatorial election. I posted an op-ed for the News Tribune, very critical of Bob Ferguson, and about what he did in asking the Secretary of State to break the law. And so here you have Matt Driscoll running the opinion section of the Tacoma News Tribune, a liberal. I don't know if he supported Dave or supported Bob Ferguson or not, but was willing and was very complimentary when I submitted my op-ed and we went through the edits of it and thanked me for sharing my opinion with the readers of the Tacoma News Tribune. And that meant a lot to me. And even before that, I believe this was back in November or December, you might recall that we were covering the case of Wendy Traynor, who had been murdered in cold blood by her ex-boyfriend. And there were all these legal maneuvers to try to give him a really, really light sentence. And we were doing everything in our power to try to prevent that from happening. And that case was in Pierce County. And so I thought, man, I can rail about it on my show to our audience, but I think the people who really need to hear what a miscarriage of justice this is, are the readers of the Tacoma News Tribune. So I reached out to Matt Driscoll and I said, hey, you know, I know that we're touching on some touchy topics like around race and criminal justice, but would you be willing to publish my op-ed on this? And he was eager to, again, despite the fact that I'm sure he disagreed with some of the contents of it, but he understood that it was important to get justice for Wendy and to have a perspective out there that diverged maybe from his and from a lot of viewers and listeners and readers. And you might recall that, you know, just a few days after we published that op-ed, I don't know if it had anything to do with it, but the judge decided to give Josh Ellis a stiffer sentence than had been agreed to with prosecutors. And I really do credit Matt Driscoll for being willing to publish our words about the Wendy Traynor case and for being willing to platform opinions that diverged so much from his own. And so I valued him. That's always the kind of person that he was. And he understood that, you know, there need to be differences of opinion. And even though I had been critical at times, I mean, I have been critical on the show of the Tacoma News Tribune. I've been critical of op-eds in the Tacoma News Tribune. But that didn't bother him. And he still was willing to publish my opinions and my thoughts anyway. And I think that speaks to what kind of person he was. And this is where I come full circle to the start of my show. I was disgusted. I was genuinely disgusted to see people on my social media pages suggesting that they were okay with a 43-year-old husband and father dying because his political opinions were different than theirs. That's not the environment that we're trying to foster on this show and in this state and in this country. If I have led you to believe that that's the environment that we're trying to foster, then shame on me. You know, I think back to when we lost Dory Monson and the hate and the vitriol that were spewed by people on the left when we were suffering and sad. And I have taken names and I'll never forgive those people. I'll never forgive those people for making Dory Monson's death about politics. And I'm watching the same thing happen right now. People on the right pulling up old articles that Matt Driscoll did, old opinion pieces during the pandemic and things, and having no care or concern or empathy for a family that's without their loved one. And it really is so disappointing and so disgusting. And there's no space for that on this show. There's no space for that on my social media platforms. I will not tolerate it. You're entitled to your opinion, but that's a disgusting opinion to have. Some things are not political. Matt Driscoll was a good man. He was a good journalist. He was a good person. I am sure he was a good husband and father. If you look at his social media pages, so much of them were just about his kids. And in that sense, he reminds me of Dory in that sense. Like, when I think of Dory, I don't think about politics. I think about his daughters and I think about his wife and I think about what a good husband and what a good father he is. And, you know, that's indicative of our political climate. We can have political disagreements, but if we fail to see the humanity in people, then we're failing as a society, we're failing as a state, we're failing as a nation. So please keep that off my social media pages. And frankly, please keep it to yourself. Again, you can have political disagreements with people, but there are some things that are not about politics. And trampling on the memory of a good person, a good man, a good journalist is simply unacceptable. So that out of my system. It bothered me all freaking night. I had to stop looking at my Facebook and my Twitter accounts. I was ashamed to be associated with people who were making those comments. And so I just want to bring it full circle and say this is a devastating loss for Washington State. It's a devastating loss for journalism. We have too few people in journalism as it is, and we have too few people who are really willing to see and acknowledge the importance of having diverging opinions. And Matt Driscoll was one of those people. I have so many fond memories of him from our time in Seattle. And you know, again, my heart goes out to his fellow staffers at the Tacoma News Tribune, to people in journalism who have worked with him over the last 15 plus years, to his wife, to his kids. And it's certainly the world is a much sadder place without him in it. And I thank him for his willingness to platform our opinions and stories that were important to us. So Matt Driscoll, dead at 43, a significant loss to Washington State. All right, I want to move on and talk about some election-related things. The primary election is going to be here before we know it. It's happening on August 6th. You should have your ballot by now. We talked on the show about some suggestions that I made for who to vote for, but you do you. You know, all I can do is cover the races, talk about issues I think are important, and you go from there. Now, in the race for governor, there are really four candidates that I think have risen to the top of what is a really big pile of candidates. There's like 30 candidates in the race for governor. And man, if you're not a connected voter and you're looking at that ballot, it takes up like a full column of the ballot. You're probably like, what do I do with this? So obviously you have Bob Ferguson. You have Dave Reichert. I think those are probably going to be, unless something insane happens, the people who advance past the primary election. You also have on the Republican side, Semi Byrd, and you have on the Democratic side as a more moderate option, Mark Mullett. Now, I have endorsed Dave Reichert. That's very clear. I think that he's the best person for this moment in Washington State. But also, I really value Mark Mullett. I think for someone who just is telling themselves, I simply cannot vote for a Republican candidate, Mark Mullett is a really good option as a Democrat who has shown that he can be bipartisan, who has shown that he can go against his own party when his own party does absolutely wild stuff. So those two being what I believe are the most independent-minded candidates, I wanted to bring them on Undivided today and offer them a final opportunity to make a final pitch to voters of Washington State who might be on the fence. And so we'll start with my choice for governor, Dave Reichert. Dave Reichert, welcome back to Undivided.
Hey, I'm happy to be back. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So what have you been focused on this summer leading up to the primary, which is just in a few days?
Gosh, the major focus is to reach out to every person in Washington State that's, you know, that's ready to vote and change Washington State. So we've been traveling the state and just meeting with as many voters in Washington State as possible.
I'll say I've been covering politics in the state for 15 years. I've never seen a smear campaign quite like the one that Bob Ferguson has rolled out against you. He has a lot of money to get a lot of attention on those smears. What has been the approach to sort of push back against some of what I've said on the show or just blatant lies?
Yeah, you know, it's difficult because he was able to get a head start on raising money by transferring some funds from his attorney general campaign fundraising efforts. So that put us a little bit behind. We have raised about $4.2 million. It takes a lot of money to run ads. He's run about $2.5 million worth of ads right now. We're running about $500,000. And what's frustrating is that he's a politician. He is a politician. I'll say that over and over again. He spreads lies, and spreads fear. And it's frustrating because I've spent an entire career trying to reduce fear. And, you know, I've been on the witness stand my entire career and raised my hand to tell the whole truth and nothing but the truth. So help me God. So I come from a different world than he does. And I'm, you know, what you see is what you get with me.
Has that been working? I mean, do you have voters who come up to you and express concern over the things that Bob has been talking about around, you know, abortion, for instance, or same-sex marriage?
Yes. Even in the parades, some people are coming out and saying, hey, what about this ad, you know, that Bob Ferguson has put up? And I said, it's just, it's untrue. And so I get, you know, if you're running through a parade, and I, if you've seen me in my parades, I run back and forth from side to side to touch as many voters as I can and as many people as I can. I just enjoy meeting people. But yes, they are having an impact. When I get a chance to explain myself, then people are saying, well, okay, I get it. I understand.
Yeah. So, you know, this is about, obviously, we'll have you in for a sit down if you make it through the primary election and talk a little bit more about the specifics of your platform. But for Washington voters who are, you know, maybe not thrilled with the direction of the state and who are torn and trying to make up their minds, what would be the fundamental difference with having a Governor Dave Reichert over a Governor Bob Ferguson?
Yeah, I think bottom line is that people are tired of constant news reports of crime. They're living in a community where their cars are being stolen, their homes are being broken into. They may live in a community where the homeless are living on the streets, where people are using drugs. If they're tired of that, then they need to vote for Dave Reichert. If they want to increase police presence and have a safe community, they need to vote for Dave Reichert. If they want to reduce homelessness, they want to help those people on the street that are addicted to especially fentanyl and other dangerous drugs, if they're mentally ill, then vote for Dave Reichert. If you want to lower costs, lower taxes, you want to use the energy that you want to use in your home, then vote for Dave Reichert. If you want to have some control and some say over what school your child goes to and what your child is learning in school, then vote for Dave Reichert. Those are some of the quick top line messages that I can give. If you want honesty in government, then vote for Dave Reichert. I've got a record of honesty throughout my 33 years in the sheriff's office and 14 years in Congress. I'm ready to serve. I'm doing this because I want to make a difference. I want to bring balanced government back to Washington State. Far too long, we've had one failed solution after another.
Let me end with two questions, just to be clear, because I think for people on the fence, these are going to be two fundamental things they've been seeing all over the place. I've said I'm pro-choice. If I thought for 1 second that you were lying, that you would go try to do something to erode a woman's right to choose, I wouldn't support your campaign and I wouldn't vote for you. So if, yep. for voters who have seen the ads from Bob Ferguson saying that you would erode the right of a woman to choose what to do with her body, you say what?
I say absolutely not. That question has been asked and answered. We've had a law in the state since 1970. It's been codified in law several times since then. Obviously, Supreme Court has said, look, this is a state rights issue. It's the people of the state of Washington that need to make this decision. I have no desire at all to change the abortion laws in Washington state. I did not vote for a nationwide ban on abortion. I don't know how much more clearer I can make it. I don't think the governor should have that power, should make that decision for the women and the voters of Washington state. I believe that the voters of Washington state should make that decision.
Yeah. And this is what I'll end on, because anything can happen in elections. Like, look, I think that you're going to make it past the primary, but crazier things have happened. There's a few other candidates in the race. There's been a division amongst Republicans. What would you say today to conservatives who do not believe that you're conservative enough to earn their vote?
Well, I mean, their choice is Bob Ferguson and Dave Reichert. I think that's an easy choice. I'm a person who makes decisions based on facts. I am not an ideologue. I'm just going to be upfront with everybody. Look, I want to be the guy who says, let's bring Washington State together. That includes everyone from Washington State. I think there's a lot of frustrated people in the middle that want to address the issues that we're facing today. And I want to encourage everyone from the left, from the right, and from the middle to come together. Let's work together. Let's find solutions. Let's look at the facts and let's move forward and fix Washington State.
That, again, a final pitch from Republican candidate for governor Dave Reichert. As I mentioned, you know, I think there are a couple good options among the 30 that candidates who are running for governor. And one of them is State Senator Mark Mullett, a Democrat who I have come to respect tremendously for his willingness to push back against the worst impulses of his own party. So I invited Mark on the show as well today to make his final pitch to voters. Mark Mullett, welcome back to Undivided.
It's glad to be back.
Yeah. So talk about how you've spent your summer, you know, trying to make the pitch to voters ahead of the primary.
Well, I think the main focus from our side is I think the only way you can beat Bob Ferguson is to have a candidate who is fiscally conservative and socially liberal. I think that's how you kind of get a coalition to beat Bob. And we've been going around the state making that argument to every group that'll have a speak. And I do find it resonates with people. And we're just going to keep spreading that message as much as possible up until August 6th.
Yeah. And, you know, you and I have had conversations about this offline as well. And invariably, when I'm at events where there's a lot of Republicans, there's a faction that is supporting Dave. And then there's a faction that comes up to me and says, Brandy, why aren't you supporting Mark Mullett? You know, he's the only one who can beat Bob Ferguson. And I get like a tongue lashing from Republicans about it. So I understand the point that you have made about that, about how if you make it past the primary, there's no doubt in my mind you'd beat Bob Ferguson. If Dave Reichert makes it past, it's going to be a very, very challenging thing to do. So when you are making that pitch to Republican voters, who I would argue more of our viewers are Republicans than Democrats, what is the pitch that you make to them about why you're the better candidate to move past the August primary?
I think it's, and you've obviously dealt with me during my time in the state Senate. When I say I'm fiscally conservative and socially liberal, you know I'm not gaslighting on those issues. I mean, my track record 100% lines up with that. I think we've had disagreements on some of the social issues like 5599. So I'm proud of being socially liberal, but I'm also proud of being fiscally conservative. And I think when we actually get in front of rooms and people hear that message, it definitely resonates, whether you're in Eastern Washington or Western Washington. Our ultimate challenge is how many rooms can you get in front of to share that message? And this is our whole focus of the campaign, is continue trying to get that word out as much as possible, because our state needs to shift in a better direction. I think you can have a fiscally conservative governor in the state of Washington. I firmly believe that is a possibility. I do not think Washington voters will elect a socially conservative governor. And so I think my message to independents, moderate Republicans, you're going to have to decide at some point, are you willing to cross party lines and actually vote for a moderate Democrat? Or are you just going to vote for the letter? If you're going to vote for the letter, I think we're going to have far left governors for all of time in the state of Washington, because like I lead kind of the, I don't know, we call them reasonable and pragmatic Democrats in Olympia, where I feed them lunch every couple of weeks. I mean, Brandy, I feed every reasonable moderate Democrat with like two large pizzas. It's like we're outnumbered, right? Yeah. It's not, there's 87 elected Democrats. You know, there's 8 or 10 people that I think really dive in and are willing to buck the party on difficult issues. So the top of the ticket on the Democratic side is never going to be the moderate. It's always going to be the one who's this far left. And so the only way you can ever defeat that, I think, is to have this bipartisan coalition.
Yeah.
But that has to happen in the primary, because if it doesn't happen in the primary, there's no chance for it to happen.
Well, let me tell you, when you say, you know, reasonable Democrat, you know who's been acting like a very reasonable Democrat lately?
Who's that?
Bob Ferguson. All of a
He's
sudden,
spending
all of a sudden,
millions
Bob
of dollars to
Ferguson.
rewrite history.
Yeah, all of a sudden, Bob Ferguson is a very moderate Democrat. I'm interested in your take on some of his ads. You know, he put out this ad about public safety and fentanyl, and before that, talking about he's going to push back against the status quo. You know, I have my opinion. Obviously, you know, I'm biased, but as a actual moderate Democrat, how have those ads struck you?
Just offensive. I mean, I think you've said it on the show. It's gaslighting. That's what he's doing. He's spending millions of dollars to rewrite history. And if you go back to his original launch video, his original launch video was he was trying to make sure he wasn't going to get outflanked from the left. And now it comes down to the bare end. And now he's just spending millions of dollars to basically say, look at me, like I support law enforcement, yet I won't even actually sit down and answer questions from the Washington Association of sheriffs and police chiefs. He literally was the only of the four candidates who literally just refused, as the top cop in our state, to even sit down for an interview where you knew the questions in advance. There was no gotcha questions. And the fact that he actually spent the time and money to record an ad rather than just meet with actual police and hear what their concerns were speaks volumes about his character.
Yeah. Speaking of character, because that's, you know, what we've seen, it's obvious to me, it's obvious to you, this rewriting of history. I will say, I was shocked and saddened, and I don't get sad often in politics, that the Seattle Times didn't endorse you. I had even told you at some point, I was like, oh, they'll endorse you. That's not even a question in my mind. I thought they'll never endorse Bob Ferguson, you know, all the transparency issues that he's had, public safety, wants to legalize hard drugs. Were you as surprised as I was, or not so much?
That was a rough day, I'll be honest. That was a rough day. And so there was a recent op-ed written in to kind of, I think, criticize the Times for their endorsement of Bob. And I thought that did a good job of articulating the differences between Ferguson and myself. But I will admit, it was tough. And I feel like I'm fighting a battle, because I say, when you are socially liberal and fiscally conservative, you don't naturally fit into either home. It's like you come out and say, I support gay marriage and women's reproductive rights, and I also hate the long-term care payroll tax. And so just on those three issues, you've managed to upset people on both sides of the political spectrum. And that's the ultimate challenge for me in this entire race, is I just don't fit cleanly into that box of, you know, all Democrat or all Republican. Like, I'm really proud of the Democrats on these social values, but it doesn't change the reality that I've been the most vocal against the long-term care payroll tax since the bill was introduced in 2019. And I'm not going to back away from that. And so I am going to always be transparent and honest of where I am. And like I said, we have a couple of weeks of people filling out ballots, and that's it, right? So our hope is, you know, I just wanted voters to have the choice to actually vote for somebody, because I have been sympathetic. I think Republicans say, I feel like my vote in Washington doesn't count. And when I hear that and I see Republicans who I'm friends with relocating to other parts of the country, that for me was actually a real reason for wanting to run, is I wanted, if you're a moderate or independent, I wanted you to have somebody on the ballot in the primary you could actually vote for and say, hey, here's someone who lines up with me, who also probably feels similar to I do. They don't neatly fit into either political party. And that is the option we're giving voters in this primary. And we'll see how it goes. And if it goes poorly, I think my fear is that it's going to be hard to find future Mark Mullets who are willing to buck their own party and really go down this middle lane. Because if voters are only going to vote based on the letter in the primary, that makes it really hard.
Yeah. I told you all along, you should have run as an independent. I would love to see an I next to your name. I think it's more fitting of what you are. And I'm curious, let's just be honest. I mean, the polling for you has been single digits, right? We can be frank about that. And so I think we can look at the primary clear eyed. I would rather have you in government in some form. I mean, people who watch this show will know that you have almost single-handedly been responsible for killing some bad bills and resuscitating some necessary ones, like police pursuits. So, you know, given the fact that you've pushed pretty hard against Democrats, you've done some things they haven't liked, like exposing the fact that they sold an endorsement to Bob Ferguson for $1 million. Are you persona non grata with Democrats if you lose this election? Is that the end of your political career?
I don't think that's the case. I mean, I think that I will admit, I love public service. I'm not obviously a very partisan politician. I just have never gotten any joy out of just yelling and screaming at the other side of the aisle. And there's nothing that could ever happen that would change that. So I'd rather not be in politics. If the only way you can be in politics is to yell and scream the other side of the aisle, it's just not of interest to me. But I will, you know, we'll see how everything goes and we'll see what the voters say. But, you know, at this point in time, yes, people have their ballots, right? And they've got time to influence it. And I think I completely understand what you're saying. The polls are the polls, but the only poll that in the end of the day matters is how people actually vote when they fill in their bubble. And most people obviously have not voted yet. And so this is why I'm always willing to go on your show. Like I said, I like the fact that even when we disagree, it's done in a way that I think is very professional and respectful. And I know you and I haven't agreed on some of these social issues, but you've never done it in a way that's made me be like, oh, I'm not going to go back on her show again. It's like, it's always done in a way that seems, like I say, professional, which
I
appreciate.
Not a coward, because when you when we disagree, like 55-99, you were in studio sitting next to me explaining why you voted for it. And so I appreciate people who aren't cowardly in their positions and are willing to come and defend them. By the way, if I haven't mentioned it before, the mullet time signs are my favorite political signs of the cycle. There's a couple outside where I go work out in Issaquah, and I love them. So brilliant. But Mark Mullet, make your final pitch to voters who are on the fence.
My final pitch is our state needs to change in a more reasonable direction. That change is not going to happen through somebody who is conservative on the social issues, because the Washington voters in November are not going to go for that. So we're down to the final hours here, right? Where if people want to see change in our state, they're going to have to really look at what's the candidate that has the ability to have a bipartisan broad coalition of business and labor groups supporting them, public safety groups supporting them, who can actually take on Bob Ferguson and isn't going to be susceptible to these attacks like we've seen around women's reproductive rights and other things, where they can't attack me. They can attack the Republican candidates, but they can't attack me on those issues. And I think that's our best path going forward to actually have change in the state of Washington. And I've done everything I can. I will have no regrets no matter how things turn out on August 6th. I will have no regrets. And I say I've absolutely loved my time in public service, and it's been really enjoying and satisfying. And I have no... I'm definitely not second guessing anything that's happened so far.
All right, Mark. Well, we'll be watching. Good luck in the August primary, and we'll talk to you soon.
Hey, thanks for having me on. Take care.
Yeah, so there you have it. Two candidates making their final pitch to voters in the race for governor. And I'm sure invariably people are going to say, well, why aren't you having, well, probably no one's going to ask why we're not having Bob Ferguson. If Bob wants to come on, like, you know, let's go. And as far as Semi Bird goes, look, he has allowed people to personally attack me, people who have threatened myself and my family. I'm not giving him a platform on my show, period. And that's what it is. If you don't like that, you can start your own political podcast. Nicole's giggling over there. Am I wrong, though? Not doing it. If he didn't want people acting like that way, he would say so. All right. I have encouraged you guys, if you're trying to save money as a family, you know, you're looking, what can we cut? You can't cut your insurance, but can you save money on your insurance? Can you get better insurance for the same price? I highly recommend taking the First Mark Challenge. I took it. I'm now a member of the First Mark family. Nicole's a member of the First Mark family. Undivided is insured through First Mark Insurance. There's a reason. It's a superior service, and you never pay First Mark anything for their services. We've had so many viewers and listeners of Undivided who have taken the First Mark Challenge and are also members of the First Mark family. Maggie is one of them. She said after resigning from her job, it was an unexpected situation. She's like, well, now while I find a new job, I've got to cut costs. So she'd heard us talking about the First Mark Challenge. She finally decided now's the time for me to dive in, take the challenge. She said, I'm very happy to report I was connected with Levi at First Mark, and after he reviewed my car and home insurance, he recommended a new bundle that was half the cost and better coverage. I was very surprised and so thankful. And Maggie, we're thankful to have you as a member of the First Mark family as well. So take the First Mark Challenge today. Not only does the First Mark Challenge cost you nothing, you never pay First Mark a dime for their services. It truly is a no-brainer. They've been doing this in the Washington State, Seattle area for a very, very long time. So firstmarkinsurance.com, firstmarkinsurance.com. The very best part is they work for you. Are you ready for some good news? Are you ready just to feel invigorated? So there is some new polling out conducted in part by the Seattle Times. It's called the WAW poll. It's sponsored by the Seattle Times, King 5, University of Washington's Center for an Informed Public. So They put out polling and they put out individual stories at the Times on every one of the four initiatives that are going to be on your ballot in November. Remember, there's nothing on the ballots for the primary election about the initiatives. You just vote on them in November. And how are we voting on the initiatives? Well, I shouldn't say that. How am I voting on the initiatives? I'm going to vote yes to pay less. It's the easiest way to explain it to people. You vote yes on all the initiatives to pay less. So the initiatives and the possibility of them passing looks very, very good based on these polls. And again, I go back to who are the polls from? Seattle Times, King 5, University of Washington. If anything, those are leaning to the other side, to the no side, in my opinion. So let's just go through each of them, because I think you'll also be maybe not stunned, but it's nice to see that it doesn't matter Republican, Democrat, or independent. People really support these initiatives. And I love to see that. And that's because these initiatives are pushing back against bad policies. And across the political spectrum, people are understanding that. So let's start with my personal favorite, the initiative to repeal the Climate Commitment Act, which is Initiative 2117. So according to WA poll, among all respondents, regardless of political party, 48% are certain to vote yes to repeal the CCA. 34% are certain to vote no. And there's 18% who aren't sure. 48% at this juncture is very, very good. Although there's a lot of money, millions and millions of dollars in a PAC to oppose Initiative 2117. So the yes side really needs to get their, well, they do have their stuff together. They need more money to be able to make sure that they're out there countering the narrative on the no on 2117, folks. But 48% who are certain, that's good. We just need to pick up a few more percentage points. And as I pointed out earlier, this is regardless of party affiliation. 56% of Republicans say they're certain to vote yes, although that seems low to me. Introduce me to the Republicans who are certain to vote no. That's confusing.
Yeah, I'd like to meet them too.
That's weird. Democrats, 47%. Independents, 44%. So that's pretty darn good if you ask me. All right, the initiative, the newest of all the initiatives on natural gas. So this is the initiative that was just pushed through in a month and a half. They got 450,000 signatures to protect natural gas, to say, no, you can't ban it from our homes or our businesses. You have to have a choice. So it's protecting energy choice. 54% of all respondents in the WA poll survey say they are certain to vote yes for that initiative. 21% say they're certain to vote no. That's a big discrepancy. Only 21% are certain that they'd vote no. And again, you look at the same thing when it comes to party lines, it really doesn't make a difference. More people are certain to vote yes than certain to vote no. All right, the initiative to make the long-term care tax optional doesn't do away with it. It just says if you want to use the program, then yeah, you can pay into it. But if you don't want to use the program, then you don't have to see money come out of every single paycheck from now until you retire, which is just common sense. 52% of respondents say they are certain to vote yes. And I take that to mean they can't be swayed. So if it's over 52%, that's looking pretty good, right? 27% say they're certain to vote no. You see the same demographics here along party lines. This is the next one is the interesting one. And we always knew that the initiative 2109 to repeal the capital gains tax, it's going to be the trickiest, because the argument from the folks who want to keep capital gains is this is just about the rich people. Why do you feel bad for the rich people? And they're going to say you're going to lose all of these services for the poor if you cut the capital gains tax. That's a pretty compelling argument. And you see that this is the only one that appears to kind of be more, well, I guess the other one was 48%, 46% on initiative 2109 say they are certain to vote yes. But that's still double the number that are certain to vote no. So it shows you that that's still on a really good trajectory. 54% of Democrats, 54% of Republicans, 44% of Democrats, and 45% of independents say they are certain to vote yes. And these numbers are really before there has been, you know, like I said, there's millions of dollars in the coffer to try to protect all of these measures for the no on the initiative side of things. And they've had some ads, some marketing and stuff out there, but you know, they haven't begun to use that money, I don't think, in earnest. So let's hope the people who are saying right now they're certain to vote yes aren't swayed by what will absolutely be the lies and fear-mongering tactics. I mean, Bill Gates gave $1 million to keep the Climate Commitment Act. Bill Gates, one of the richest men in the world, gave $1 million to keep you poor. I'm just like, I really hope that $1 million isn't used to lie and scare Washington voters. But I don't know about you, Nicole. I feel, hi, Nicole.
Hey.
I feel great about that.
I do.
I have a...
I think it's good. And I mean, there was quite a few in those breakdowns. It mentions quite a few Democrats voting yes. So yeah. That makes me happy.
Well, yeah, but, like I said, it's like...
Yes.
I mean, even on cap gains,
right.
44% of Democrats who were polled said they are certain to vote yes. Right.
So that makes me very hopeful.
It does. And I love to see that. But that is reflective of mm-hmm. when Brian Haywood ran the initiatives, mm-hmm. all six of them initially, he had a way of sort of looking at when they were scanning mm-hmm. in the documents, more or less how people were politically affiliated. You know, if they were also part of other records like donations to Republican or Democratic candidates. And his showed
kind of scary what they
this is
out.
Almost identical mm-hmm. to what his analysis of people who signed the initiatives, what their political makeup was. Because he said at the time, the combined number of independents and Democrats far outweighs the number of Republicans who signed the initiatives.
Right.
So he knew going into it that these had bipartisan support. And so this makes sense that now we're seeing bipartisan support from the electorate as a whole to pass them into law, to vote yes.
Pay less, which is what we need to yeah. make sure people are telling their yes. friends. I told, you know, I filled out my ballot last night with the primary stuff, but then yeah. I also was like, yes, 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 yes to some family members just to make sure everybody knew.
Yeah. I mean, it's not on the primary, but just so they know heading into the November election.
The word.
Vote yes.
Pay less.
Vote yes.
Pay less.
Vote yes.
Pay less.
Vote yes.
Pay less.
Woo! Easy. Nicole said before the show, that should be on billboards. That's
it
all.
It really should.
Vote yes. Pay less.
Brian spent a lot of money already, so we yeah. really got to step it up for him.
Yeah, let's go WA.com. Yeah. Go in there, throw him a few bucks for that billboard. But yeah. I love this stuff. I have a secret steak dinner bet. I love steak dinner bets. It's because I love steak and I love mashed potatoes.
Might as well buy it.
Yeah, except...
Either way, you win.
Well, right. Like, when I buy you guys your steak dinner for losing the bet about Biden, then I'm going to get a double dose of mashed potatoes. Yeah. But I made... There's somebody I know. I won't name them and shame them, but they're helping the no on all these initiative campaigns. I like them. They're very nice, very reasonable, but we just disagree politically, which is fine. But I made a... bet with them that if more of these initiatives pass than not, I get a steak dinner, vice versa. So maybe I buy you guys a steak dinner and then I get bought a steak dinner. And at the end of the day, I think
hopefully,
that would be good.
I'm hoping for you.
Net. Thank you. I
appreciate also think,
that.
I mean, beware of these Seattle Times things because we didn't really talk about the titles, but they're like, you know, tax the rich, like that. Yep. All of the titles are very.
Yeah. Can we actually.
Pull them back up.
Yeah. Can we actually go. So just the first one with the mm-hmm. CCA. State carbon market and energy regulations face tough road before November election. And I get it, but like the state carbon market, it's the Climate Commitment Act. So it's sort of like the jargon used around that is all so varied that it's not consistent, where I feel like that might confuse people, mm-hmm. right? It's repealing the Climate Commitment Act. And then if we jump down to the cap gains one, yeah, the headline, while lawmakers decided to tax the rich, polls mm-hmm. show voters aren't so sure. The tax the rich, that is the narrative that the left uses, right? So the Seattle Times is sort of using that narrative. If, you know, on the opposite side, couldn't they just as easily say lawmakers passed a unconstitutional income tax? Voters right. aren't so sure. It's lawful. You know what I mean? So mm-hmm. it's and just even, the push is interesting.
Even on the long-term care, I'll bring that one up really quick. So that one, I mean, they use a picture of Inslee and Wah cares. Like, nobody cares yeah. if you vote. If you yeah. vote no, then you care. If you vote yes, you must not care for Washington.
Yeah. And they call it Wah cares because it's like, oh, we care about people. Right. It's like, no, the program's an absolute disaster. Yes. You can put a heart around it. You can make me, Wah cares. It's like, okay, you don't care about the people who are going to have to pay into it for their entire working lives and will never benefit from it because they decide to move to a different state. You don't care so much about them, do you? Again, there's nothing controversial about choice, right? Mm-hmm. The left loves choice.
Yep.
You know, let people choose whether they would like this safety net, whether they would like to benefit from this program when they retire. And for people who don't want to, then they shouldn't have to pay into it. That's just socialism. So yeah, that's how I feel about that. Mm-hmm. Okay, and also we talk to with the Rental Housing Association of Washington every single week to talk about issues facing housing providers. And when you look at these initiatives, particularly the Climate Commitment Act, and also the effort to preserve energy choice, this is going to be critical. This is make or break for landlords in the state of Washington. They're already crushed under all these regulations. People can live in their house for 2 years without paying rent, and it's no big deal because that's how our laws are set up in Washington state. And then if these fail, you can bet that next legislative session, there is going to be, Democrats are going to be so emboldened to keep pushing these energy regulations that are going to reduce the availability of housing in Washington state at a time when we already have a housing shortage. So today, Chester Baldwin, who's a lobbyist for the Rental Housing Association, so he's talking to lawmakers behind the scenes about this stuff all the time. He agreed to join us to talk not only about these latest poll numbers, but also about a story we discussed on the show yesterday that electrical rates are about to spike for ratepayers. Chester, welcome to Undivided.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, so I want to talk about electrification and some of the cost burdens that are going to be passed through to users. But first, I've just got to ask you, because the Seattle Times released some new polling on all of the ballot initiatives that are going to be in front of voters in November, and specifically a couple that for members of RHA are really going to be critical. So if you support all the initiatives, this is a very good poll for you. So both on repeal of the CCA, it seems like it says right now 48% of all respondents are certain to vote yes, 18% not certain. So there's a lot of room there to get it across the finish line. Also on the latest ballot measure to protect the right to use natural gas in our homes and businesses, 54% of respondents said they are certain to vote yes. And those numbers are great, whether you're a Republican, a Democrat, or an independent. Is that a surprise to you, sir?
You know, I'm not sure they surprise me. I am really happy to hear that we are starting to return to some semblance of reasonableness. And I think that's what this polling shows. And, you know, from the Rental Housing Association's perspective, we represent about 5,000 members, and those members are mostly small housing providers. They're your average citizen. And so these things represent significant cost increases to your average household. And so our members are against those things strongly. We've already seen the impact on the gas pump of the CCA and what it's done to those people who have the least resources in our communities, yet have to be able to afford gas and be able to drive. And this, the natural gas is no different. It's even a bigger issue because I don't think most Washington citizens even realize that their legislature and their governor are trying to ban their natural gas at their house, making them responsible to upgrade to an electrical system on their dime. I don't think anybody knows that.
Yeah, and you're in Olympia all the time, I imagine, talking to legislators on both sides of the aisle. Have you ever gotten a good explanation as to how they would expect, you know, lower class, middle class, I would argue even upper middle class households to come out of pocket for electrification?
You know, we have a very bipartisan membership at the Rental Housing Association, and so we do a lot of work on both sides of the aisle and hoping that our lawmakers in Olympia can come together and get things done on behalf of citizens. Because, you know, if you look at our legislature before COVID, they did a great job working together in a bipartisan way, not anything like what happens in D.C. And I think we've lost a little bit of that since COVID, and I think some of these, what I would call a little more extreme policies, are a reflection of that. And natural gas is just the latest of those, but it is a really big one for your average family and your average household who depends on those things. Not to mention the cost increase that we have been told will be reflected in having to go away from natural gas. And there's so many other arguments, but I'll leave it there for now.
Yeah, but I imagine that you guys have tried to get, that RHA has tried to get an answer from those who support a ban on natural gas to like, well, how are people going to pay for that?
We have not been able to get anyone who can give us a good answer on that, especially at the same time as answering the question of how do we go to all electric vehicles by 2030, as our governor said we're going to do, at the same time where we're talking about blowing up the dam so the salmon can swim upstream. Like, I don't know if our general folks understand where our power in this state comes from and why we have such reasonable electric rates and how much of that is due to the hydroelectric power that we have. Yeah. So I think it's a big issue.
Yeah, and I guess it's also to me about sending a message. You mentioned something early that, you know, these poll results reflect that maybe there's some desire to get back to sanity and, you know, reasonableness. I guess I'm really fearful if these initiatives don't pass that it'll just embolden, you know, one party in particular to say, okay, well, voters want this now. Like, let's charge ahead even faster with a ban on natural gas. Do you foresee that happening?
Yes, I think that if the general public does not come out and support the existence and the continued use of their natural gas, even in understanding, you know, the dramatic cost increases that are going to happen to their electric rates and doing that, if they don't come out and support this, it will send a message to Olympia that this is a policy that's supported by the state. And if this is a policy that's supported by the vast majority of residents in our state, then I guess that's our policy. But I'm not sure that's true, especially on this issue. I think what is true is that the vast majority of our population doesn't know that we're looking to ban their natural gas in their house and what that will mean for them personally. And if that information is just, if we can just educate voters on that and let them make an informed choice, I have a very strong feeling that even the poll numbers that you were talking about will be low in comparison to where we see the natural gas initiative end up on the ballot. I think it passes overwhelmingly, honestly.
Yeah, I hope so, because initiatives can be confusing, because you're like, do I vote no if I don't like the policy? And so we like the vote yes, pay less. Vote yes, pay less, to make sure people aren't getting confused when they figure out what to do. So you mentioned, you know, we talked about this on the show yesterday, this article from our friends at the Center Square. Seattle may jolt electric rates due to high demand as state pushes electrification. So this has to be just, and this is from Seattle City Light, you know, as the electrification for public transportation is pushed, for residential and businesses are pushed, the demand is too high for what we have. So this has to be something for you to take to lawmakers in Olympia and say, see, like, we're going about this too quickly.
Yeah. And, you know, lawmakers are concerned about this. And I think that there's lawmakers on both sides of the aisle who are concerned about what this will mean for the average consumer. And I think you can look no further than just a couple years ago when the legislature, I believe, unanimously passed, and I might have the number wrong, but I believe it was House Bill 1119. Went through the, and it was basically to determine how much power we have, how much electricity do we have, could we go away from natural gas, and they passed it unanimously, and the governor vetoed it, so we never did that. So I think the answers that we've gotten in Olympia from people who believe that we can just ban natural gas seem to be around, we'll figure it out, there'll be some technology that comes in and it'll be okay, but nobody has a plan. And when you don't even offer a phased implementation of something like this over a long period of time with some steps that everybody can get behind and start to say, okay, well, here's how we're going to do this. Like, they're just telling people you have to do it. And I don't want to go too far afield of this, but in the commercial office building industry side, their ability to not have natural gas has already caused big consequences in the city of Seattle and other places because, you know, the systems that they have to go to in order to cool or heat a building that is a million square feet, which is basically the size of one of those towers, with electric is almost impossible. And we have some biomedical facilities that cannot do what they need to do with electric only. They have to have natural gas because of the speed that they need to be able to process hot water and boil things and things beyond my understanding. But in addition to that, there's Self-Storage Association. They're against this bill as well, because they can't keep their units at the set temperature that they've promised with electricity when it gets cold. Can't happen. So there are some big challenges, and no one seems to have answers for those yet. We want to move forward in this direction anyway.
Yeah, and I think that's the key for me. Like, I love the environment. You know, I want to protect the environment. I want to serve this. We all do. You know, that's just a misnomer that if you're like, you're clinging to natural gas, that you just are selfish. And, you know, that's not the case. But it's like, we have to do it. Same with ferry systems and the electrification of ferries. Like, we waited the other day 6 hours for a ferry because they just, you know, the ferries were breaking down and all this stuff. And it's like, we all want to do it, but let's do it in a smart way that's not on the backs of the working class and on the poor, and on a way that, as you point out there in so many examples, is doable and is going to be functional for people who rely on it. So it's really weird that we're in this place where you're pushing things like cart before the horse. So I guess, you know, when you say there's lawmakers on both sides that see this and they're concerned by it, and I do believe that. I do think there are Democrats who don't want to see ratepayers who are you know, underwater in their budget and all of those things. So how do you think we get them to just take a breath, take a pause, and reassess some of these environmental efforts?
So I do think there's lawmakers on both sides of the aisle who support this issue and who are doing a really good job. And even those who don't support this issue, they're still trying to do the right thing. The thing that I think we have to keep in mind about our lawmakers in Olympia, there's not one of them that is there for the money. It is the worst part-time job you can get because it's not a part-time job, but they care and they're trying to do the right thing. And as a Washingtonian, I love our environment. I live here because of our environment. I don't want that to go downhill. Nobody else does either, but we have to find that balance between protecting the environment and taking care of people in our state. And this might be a little far afield, so I apologize, but in Washington, we're short somewhere around 1 million housing units. Our Commerce says we'll be short 1 million housing units by 2040. Yet we're 50th out of 50 states in housing availability, and we're not building more housing. And sometimes the reason that we haven't been building more housing comes down to environmental regulation and just overall regulation in the state of Washington. And so we have to at some point determine whether we're going to take care of those million families who can't find housing in our state, or we're going to not avail any other lands in our state to be built on to have new housing, because there's not really more choices. Densification is a great option. We want more housing in our urban cores, but it's never going to be inexpensive housing. It's always going to be more expensive because it is. But those urban areas can often support that. But our rural areas are struggling hard. And so, you know, we're really hurting in housing. And yet our small housing providers are leaving the market in droves because of the things that Olympia is doing on the laws that impact them, and the governor as well.
Let me end with this. And you mentioned him there at the end, and I'm just going to be blunt. When it comes to some of these climate policies that seem to be pushed at any cost and for any reason without care or concern for the challenges and the complications, will this go away a little bit when Jay Inslee is gone? The climate governor, we know he's the one who is making phone calls at 2 a.m. pressuring Democrats to push through 1589, the PSE bill. Will this get better when he's no longer governor?
I think to some extent, yes. Governor Inslee would tell you this is the number one most important issue in his number one policy. And so I think that focus leads to some of this. But whoever is our next governor, I think will maybe have a more broad issue base to which they are looking at. And, you know, specifically with the natural gas issue, if we aren't looking out for those families in our communities that have the least amount of resources and can afford the least, whether that's the gas prices at the pump or banning natural gas, those are the people who are going to suffer in our state. And I don't know that we're always looking at the cost to those families all the time when we're considering looking at environmental regulation, because we're so pro-environmental regulation in Washington, and maybe for good reason. But I think balancing those things a little bit more and maybe having a little bit more balance to that push in Olympia would be very helpful for all families. And just one last thing, you know, I think banning of natural gas is challenging for all the reasons we've already talked about. But if you look a little more broadly than just Washington state, there's a bunch of Northeast states that are trying to go to natural gas because they're trying to get away from coal and other things. And if you look at Europe's their green energy plan, it is built around clean burning natural gas, as they call it in Europe. So Washington is an outlier, certainly on a world level and even on a U.S. level, in my opinion, on trying to go away from an energy source. And very last thing, banning an energy source, if there was ever a conflict, and I'm not saying there's going to be a war or anything, but if we don't have natural gas as a state and all we have is electricity, how much easier is it in a, you know, an emergency for that to be a problem? And even on a lesser basis, you have a natural disaster and it knocks out power. Well, you know what? A lot of people still can have water from, and they can still cook with their natural gas range or take showers with their natural gas, hot water. Those options are gone in this. And I don't think people even understand or think about the ramifications of banning natural gas when we're talking about.
Yep. We've got to think of these things. I do think just personally, you know, you're not going to, even Bob Ferguson, you know, he's kind of moving away from the electrification of ferries to the extent that Inslee was. I don't think even a Governor Bob Ferguson would be pressuring Democrats on the phone at 2 a.m. to push through a poorly thought out natural gas bill. So I do think when Inslee's gone, maybe people will hit the brake a little bit. So Chester Baldwin, you're so obviously knowledgeable on these issues. We'd love to have you back on, and we appreciate you joining us.
Well, thank you so much. I would love to join you anytime. And thanks for all the work you do.
Yeah, and that's something we haven't really talked about on the show is, hey, these energy policies that are being pushed through that make no sense, from the Climate Commitment Act to the electrification of ferries to efforts to ban natural gas. Will this stop when Inslee leaves? You have the climate governor, who is the climate presidential candidate. He's been pressuring Democrats to push these things through. So when that pressure campaign is gone, maybe some of this environmental stuff won't be as crazy. One can only hope. That segment was brought to you in partnership with our friends at the Rental Housing Association of Washington. We do a segment with them every single Tuesday. If you are a landlord in Washington state, Join RHA today. It's $260 a year. RHA can have your back to fight against some of these insane policies around landlords and housing, etc. RHAWA.org. RHAWA.org. All right. If you're in the market to sell your home, make sure you check out our friend Wes Jones at sellwithwes.com. The market, you know, rates haven't gone down as the Fed had predicted they would or said that they would at the end of 2023. But that being said, it's a pretty good position right now for home sellers because there's no inventory out there. So if you're going to sell your home at some point this year, the sooner the better. Inventory is growing a little bit. And so as more homes hit the market, then you lose that competitive edge that you might have if you list your home sooner rather than later. Here's Wes.
King County, median $1 million. Homes are still selling very, very quickly. If you want to do something this year, give me a call. I'd love to start the process now. I think that things will be moving very swiftly through probably October. And then as the election starts to come up, you know, get closer, people always pump the brakes. But for all of you who are out there that are thinking like, oh, you know, I can't sell my home because I need X amount, you're probably at the peak right now. You know, it's probably worth more than it's ever been than previous times. So what are you waiting for?
Yeah, what are you waiting for? So if you get in touch with Wes Jones, sellwithwes.com, the very first thing he's going to do is give you a free market analysis so you can know how well positioned your home is. You can also use their home value calculator to see how much your home is worth. It might be worth more than you think. Sellwithwes.com, a better way to sell your home. All right, Nicole and I, after the show today, we are racing to Olympia for a shoot we have on a special we're working on. And so I told Nicole, I was like, maybe we should just cut Unbelievable today because we got to hit the road. But no. I was like, people can't live without it, so let's get to an abbreviated version of Unbelievable. Boop. All right. This is shocking. I have seen a lot of takes on the Kamala Harris thing, but the take we're seeing today from the Black Lives Matter movement is very unexpected. Before I get to it, however, let me play this clip of Senator Chuck Schumer, a Democrat, talking about this wonderful, fair, totally democratic process they went through to arrive at Kamala Harris.
So now that the process is played out from the grassroots bottom up, we are here today to throw our support behind Vice President Kamala Harris. I'm clapping. You don't have to.
Okay. Oh, my, there's nothing worse than expecting applause and you don't get it. So he calls it a democratic grassroots bottom-up movement. It's like, really? In a couple days, you had a huge grassroots movement to get behind Vice President Kamala Harris as the party's nominee, despite the entire primary process that you went through to arrive at Joe Biden. You know who's calling them out on that? The Black Lives Matter movement. Think about this for a second. I'll read their tweet. You're talking about not only, I mean, they're the identitarianists, black woman, part Indian black woman of color, which would be the first woman of color to be the presidential nominee for a major political party. And it's the Black Lives Matter movement that's now saying it has a problem with it. They put out this tweet, a 24-hour process of talking to party bosses is not democratic, nor is it a process Democrats should be proud of. We do not live in a dictatorship. Delegates are not oligarchs. Installing Kamala Harris as the Democratic nominee and an unknown vice president without any public voting process would make the modern Democratic Party a party of hypocrites. We call on the DNC to create a process that allows for public participation in the nomination process, not just a nomination by a party of delegates, by party delegates. I can't even believe. Yesterday on the show, I praised AOC. Today on the show, I'm praising the Black Lives Matter movement. But it's even more significant because they're the Black Lives Matter movement. Kamala Harris is part black. And even they are like, this stinks to high heaven. And there are some Democrats who have said, look, in order to make this look like she earned it, because she said, I'm going to go out and earn the nomination. How do you earn a nomination in a couple days? You know, there are some Democrats calling for, hey, have a quick open primary process where you do a town hall with a few of people who want to enter the race and throw their name in, and then you have delegates decide. And yeah, it'll probably be Kamala Harris, but then it won't look like something that was just automatic, like she was ordained. Because that's what it looks like right now. Who would have thought? Unbelievable. Black Lives Matter movement spewing truths on X today. Gotta love it. A couple quick things on the national front. So I love X, but also the conspiracies really move quickly on X and on other social media platforms, but I think X in particular. So for the last 24 hours, some conservatives on X have been saying that Joe Biden was either dead or in hospice. Because he hadn't seen him in a couple days. You know, he had a COVID diagnosis. He did, very strangely, announce he wouldn't be running for president via tweet, as opposed to making that announcement to the American people. So when you hide the president of the United States at such a critical juncture, well, you're just leaving room for conspiracy theories to blossom, and blossom they did. But now we have proof of life. The president of the United States was seen getting off Air Force One. Making a nice little wave to folks, sauntering down the stairs. No trips, right? Let's see if he gets through it. Take it to the bottom of the stairs. Success. Great. So proof of life. So no, Joe Biden is not dead, X. And he also says that tomorrow at 8 p.m. Eastern time, 5 p.m. our time, he is going to be addressing the nation from the Oval Office. He said, I'm going to address the nation on what lies ahead and how I will finish the job for the American people. So in case you were one of those people wondering if Joe Biden was still with us, he is. And he says he's going to speak to the nation tomorrow. I'm sure some people on X will say it's AI, but I don't know how to help you with that. Also, really quickly with some news, the Secret Service director has resigned. I'm actually surprised that it happened that quick. Nicole was saying, I'm surprised it didn't happen sooner.
Exactly.
The Secret Service director steps down, heeding calls to quit after Trump assassination attempt. And what happened in Pennsylvania was an absolute failure. Kimberly Cheadle owns that, as does any head of a government agency when there was a failure that severe. I think what it was is it's one thing for Republicans to call for a Secret Service director who's appointed by a president of the Democratic Party to resign. But when you lose AOC, I played a long clip of AOC yesterday, but the Secret Service director was under questioning from Congress, and even AOC told her to her face what an epic failure it was.
This is about the safety of some of the most highly targeted and valued targets internationally and domestically in the United States of America. So the idea that a report will be finalized in 60 days, let alone prior to any actionable decisions that would be made, is simply not acceptable. It has been 10 days since an assassination attempt on a former president of the United States, regardless of party. There need to be answers.
Yeah. And so when you've lost AOC, you've lost the Republicans, you've lost the Democrats, and you've lost their trust and their faith, it's time for you to go. So the head of the Secret Service has resigned. I think that's a very good development, but it doesn't get the agency off the hook for having to explain the failures that led to former President Donald Trump being shot in the head. All right. We'll get to Daily Subscriber Show Poll. Your burning questions and fantastic comments coming up next. First, happening on Thursday, 2 days from today, our friend Zach Abraham with Bulwark Capital is having another one of his live webinars on inflation and on the impact inflation can have on your retirement portfolio. This is really easy. You can sign up for free, knowyourriskradio.com. You can just sit there and listen to all their words of wisdom about how inflation is the silent portfolio killer. You have to plan it. You have to plan for it. You have to manage your portfolio for it, because or else the retirement you believe that you saved for, the retirement you want, might not be possible. So this is important stuff. And this is the third inflation webinar they've had because the demand has been so high. So happening Thursday, 3:30 p.m. Pacific time. You can sign up now. KnowYourRiskRadio.com. Completely free. KnowYourRiskRadio.com. Investment advisory services offered through Trek Financial LLC, an SEC-registered investment advisor. Investments involve risk and are not guaranteed. Past performance does not guarantee future results. Trek 24244. Go to KnowYourRiskRadio.com. Okay. Our daily subscriber show poll today is a follow-up to a story we did yesterday. So I have been saying Bob Ferguson's ads are some of the most dishonest ads I have seen in 15 years covering politics in Washington State. He is trying to rewrite history. He's trying to rewrite his track record. In fact, they're so dishonest. Last week, the Dave Reichert for Governor campaign sent a letter to King TV urging King TV to take more responsibility for the political content, the ad space that it is selling to political candidates, suggesting that King TV has an obligation not to broadcast these falsehoods to its viewership. Now, we don't know if King TV is going to change anything, if they should change anything. And I asked you, because I have my reservations about news stations deciding which ads are factual and which ads aren't. I don't think news fact checkers have been particularly fair. I don't necessarily trust that they'd be fair to Republican candidates and look at a Republican ad and a Democratic ad with the same level of criticality. So I asked you on Patreon, Locals and X, in our daily subscriber show poll, do you believe news stations that sell ad time to political campaigns have a responsibility to ensure that those ads are factual? Across our platforms today, people are saying yes. Aletta Woodworth says if it affects the integrity of the stations accepting the payments for the airing of those ads. Mike Berta says yes, the media is the fourth estate and have a higher standard to uphold themselves or to hold themselves to. HTA says, I'm not sure. I'm not confident in their fact source checking. Media led the charge on several inaccurate facts over the last 10 years. And that's kind of where I sit too, is like, man, who are you going to have fact check those things? Chris, I trust news stations fact checking as much as I trust an 8-year-old with the keys to the car. Rick, they should have that responsibility, but most abdicate it or put up some fact checker lies. Let's get a couple more. Bryce Filippi says, question is, what is fact and what is fiction depends on the point of view of the person who is the fact checker. I've seen many fact checkers vary their checks based on their political persuasion. And that's where I struggle with it. I don't know that you're going to see a fair fact checking depending on the political party of the candidate. But at the same time, I do think it looks bad when a news station, because we struggled with this all the time during elections when I was with Fox 13. You'd be doing your news straightforward, you know, unbiased, and then you'd go to a commercial and it would have a deeply dishonest political ad. And those would fill the commercials in our newscasts all the time. And then it would be like, geez, should I come out of that commercial and fact check that ad that our sales department got money for? It's a really weird position for TV stations to be in, but I think it's something that they ought to think a little harder about, especially as political ads get more dishonest by the day. All right, other questions and comments on the loss of Matt Driscoll. Old Sub Sailor says, it's the whole online, because I was saying, some people were saying horrible things just because he had opinion columns they disagreed with. Old Sub Sailor says, it's the whole online warrior thing. People are very brave when they are anonymous on the internet. Very sad. Social boundaries do exist and are essential for a mature society. Oh, yeah. The nastiest things said to and about me are from people who have a fake profile picture and, you know, a profile without a name on it. 100%. Kathy says, not every liberal is a butthead, and being a liberal doesn't mean you can't be a good person or a good reporter. I agree. On the gubernatorial candidate, Scott Middleton says, so who do you recommend, Brandy, Dave or Mark? I've endorsed Dave Reichert, so I think that speaks to my recommendation, but I would be perfectly happy with a Governor Mark Mullett. I just think that we need a break from one party controlling the governor's office for 40 years. I know Mark Mullett is a reasonable Democrat. He is still a Democrat. My endorsement might have been different if he had chosen to run as an independent. On the initiatives and vote, yes, pay less, Captain Cranky Pants. I think you're suggesting, you said get a tattoo, Brandy. I think you're suggesting I get a tattoo of the slogan vote yes, pay less. No.
No.
but then Warren responded, Brandy respects herself. No tattoo.
Yeah, she has a few tattoos.
I have tattoos. So I, are you saying, Warren, do I have to take my shirt off to show my tattoo?
No, we know.
Are you saying,
Warren,
short
sleeve tomorrow.
I can't get my sleeve up, that I don't respect myself. I have a tattoo here, and I have a tattoo here. And I have a big tramp stamp. I'm just kidding. I don't have a tramp stamp. I respect myself too much for a tramp stamp. Todd Welch, I'm worried about getting rid of the CCA. Most state legislators are against the initiative and letting their opinions be known. I don't get it, I guess. I'm worried about getting rid of the CCA. Most state legislators are against the initiative.
I think he's worried about like retaliation.
Maybe retaliation.
Or something like that.
Yeah. Merwin Wren, if everyone is on electricity, they are easier to control with the flip of a switch. Post something on SM and go dark on social media and go dark, including your transportation. That's true. The more beholden you are to the grid, especially if you're someone who's skeptical of government, as I am, that's not a good thing. I was telling Mike, when we build our retirement home in Eastern Washington, I want to be off the grid.
Mostly.
No.
Except for when I text you and say, can't come over.
No, I'm going to say no. No, I'm going to need you there because I want to start a dog rescue. And I don't know if I can handle all those dogs. And I just, you know, I'm going to need help.
I'm excited for this idea.
Yeah, I think this is great. So anyway, okay.
I'm going to have a cat rescue on the side.
Yeah, they'll have like one cat, a barn cat. So, all right. Good comments per the usual. Let's get to our closing sanity check, shall we? Our sanity check today is an example of how you can be the most anti-woke person and still be victimized by the woke culture and the woke mentality. Elon Musk did an interview with Jordan Peterson, and he was saying that his son, who he says he has lost his son, I mean, certainly figuratively, his son is not dead, but he says the woke mind virus is responsible for killing his son as he knew his son. And that he, as a father, was tricked into signing off on not full gender transition, but gender transition for his son, Javier, who has now changed his name, her name?
Xavier
to Vivian Wilson. Here's a clip of the interview.
It happened to one of my older boys. I was essentially tricked into signing documents for one of my older boys, Xavier. This is before I had really any understanding of what was going on, and we had COVID going on, and so there was a lot of confusion. You know, I was told, oh, Xavier might commit suicide if he
did. That was a lie right from the outset.
Incredibly evil, and I agree with you that people that have been promoting this should go to prison.
That's
so I was tricked into doing this. It wasn't explained to me that puberty blockers are actually just sterilization drugs. I lost my son, essentially, all right? So the reason it's called dead naming is because your son is dead. So my son Xavier is dead, killed by the woke mind virus.
Yeah, I think that's proof that you can be Elon Musk, you can be anti-woke, but you can still be fooled. And we have to be on high alert. We have to question absolutely everything that we're told and everything that we're told to believe. That has been your sanity check for today. That has been today's episode of Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. We appreciate every single one of you. If you have not signed up to support the show already, please do so. You can do that for just $5 a month. It does make a difference. UndividedPod.com, UndividedPod.com. While you're there, you can shop our merch store, get 25% off with the promo code SANITY24. That's SANITY and the number 24. We will see you right back here on the live show tomorrow at noon.